Hola.
Barcelona. I'm here to learn, everybody.
Sí.
Face meltingly awesome.
Barcelona. I'm profoundly dumbfounded.
Sí.
Booyah, Grandma!
Viva!
This is amazing.
Oh, yeah.
Let's do this.
What is virtualization?
You're gonna learn today.
Innovate like a startup. Deliver like an enterprise.
I hope you're coffeeed up and ready because it's gonna be a great day.
I know you're gonna dig this.
Oh, yeah.
You're listening to the Virtually Speaking Podcast with Pedro Aero and John Nicholson.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Virtually Speaking Podcast, episode number 134. My name is Pete Fletcher, a.k.a. Pedro Aero, and joining me once again is Mr. John Nicholson. John, how you doing, man?
Good, good. I think I'm finally over the jet lag and getting ready to pack my bags to bring it back on.
Yeah. I got to import my my Castilian accent. Ready for Barcelona?
Era VM World.
Yeah. Yeah, so next week is VM World Europe. Looking forward to that. Lots of good things coming up. And I thought a really cool way to kick this week off for the podcast is to play a couple of the episodes that we captured at VM World. We still have a lot of great content. And so I wanted to share a couple of those interviews with you to wet your whistle a little bit for VM World Europe. But before we do that, John, I wanted to ask you, what are you looking forward to at Barcelona this year?
Well, first off, tapas.
Tapas.
I'm looking forward to conversations that we're going to see. I feel like VCF is going to have some focus. There kind of was a sleeper release, 3.9, that there's a lot of excitement building around.
Oh, yeah.
Also, just putting together the pieces of some of the acquisitions, and not just necessarily the really big ones people think about, but also some of the smaller ones like Bitfusion, some of the kind of quieter, real nerdy R&D stuff about where we're going with that.
Oh, yeah. VMworld US was, you know, Kubernetes. I'm curious to see if there's going to be a similar storyline.
It's not going
to
slow down.
Yeah.
You know, someone told me that whenever you see someone sad, you should walk up to them and be like, I've got one word of advice for you, Kubernetes. And then just like walk away. So.
Yeah. Lots of good stuff. Yeah, John, you mentioned Bitfusion. That's one of the interviews that we've got, actually. We spoke to Niels Haglort and Justin Murray. These guys have been working on some really cool stuff with Bitfusion. So we're going to share that. We've got an interview with Sanjay Poonen, talked a little bit about Tanzu and Carbon Black and a bunch of other really good things. We had a conversation with a VMware customer about vVols. You know Vince Wood. And lastly, we had a conversation with another customer, a vSAN customer, who was presenting a solution for 2Node, not Robo, 2Node, vSAN 2Node.
I could hear, anytime someone says Robo in relation to vSAN, I can just hear Chase grinding his teeth.
Exactly. Yeah. So lots of good conversations coming up here in a minute. But yeah, John, so a couple of things that I want to share with folks. First off is we will not be having a podcast booth in the Solutions Exchange, but we will be podcasting. We will be doing interviews with folks. So if you're out there and you want to catch up with us, be sure to send us a message on Twitter or email or whatever else, and we'd love to grab some time with you. And we're also doing our session on Wednesday, the Virtually Speaking Podcast live session. I know they moved us to a bigger room, so the room that we have now fits like 500. So so there should be some more room in there now. So if you tried to register before and it was full, try again. And that's going to be on Wednesday at 5 p.m. Yeah, so and we are bringing some cool Virtually Speaking Podcast swag, so be sure to show up for that.
Just remember, if you're going to sit in the front row, please bring a raincoat or an umbrella.
I love it. So yeah, John, let's see. What other sessions are we looking forward to this week? I pulled up a couple of ones that are on my radar. Let's see. There's always the Frank Dennerman show, the NUMA deep dive. That's going to be a great one.
So one, I was going to say self-plugging, I'll be presenting with Brock Yanda. We're going to be talking vSAN and networking deep dive and a lot of just networking stuff. Talk about some kind of low-level details, what type of hardware offloads matter, things like that. Get into some of the kind of some of the basics and also some of the deep kind of areas where the networking can snag a lot of people.
Oh, yeah. There's another really good one for optimizing vSAN performance by Pauty O'Riden. I think that one's going to be another good vSAN session. I know the showcase keynote for HCI, that was done in US with John Gilmartin and Duncan, but it's actually going to be done with John Gilmartin and Cormac Hogan in Europe. So that should be pretty good.
So I was actually kind of annoyed. I had a conflict on that in San Francisco. So I will be clearing whatever is on my schedule to sneak off for that this time.
Oh, yeah. So yeah, lots of good sessions for VMworld this year. And I also noticed the band that this year that they're bringing. I hadn't heard of this band before. Have you heard of them? The Stereophonics?
No, but I generally have not heard of the band that's playing in Europe, despite the overwhelming excitement that either comes respectively from the Brits or Duncan.
Yeah. Hey, listen, there have been some good bands in Europe for sure. But this, and I played a couple of songs on Spotify. They're not too bad, but I'd never heard of the Stereophonics.
Oh, no, this is... I enjoyed the band the last year I went, but it's more of just I'm calling out my lack of musical knowledge than implying the band is obscure.
Yeah, for sure. But yeah, no, VMworld is upon us, man. Like I said, lots of the same stuff. So if you are attending, you know, obviously, hopefully you've already registered for your sessions. There is going to be the hall crawl. They are going to have the same meet the experts. The only big change, as I mentioned already, is in the Solutions Exchange, there will not be a virtually speaking podcast booth. So be aware of that.
So the band I remember was Kaiser Chiefs. I had never heard of them, but man, was everyone excited. So I was like, all right, I'll actually, you know, go to the party. And wow, they were good. So I'm hoping that, you know, since I don't have Spotify, that my music discovery method of just wandering into conference parties will continue to amaze me.
Yeah. No, Kaiser Chiefs, they were really good. That's for sure. That was good stuff. VMworld Barcelona in general, I think, is a great conference. I mean, I know it's a lot smaller than the U.S., you know, and it's, you know, everyone's spread all around the city, which is, you know, could be a little difficult. But I do think it's a little bit more technical, which I like. There is usually new content. It's not like just a complete repeat, you know, from VMworld U.S., but so there is some net new content there. I know our podcast session is going to be a similar theme, but it's going to certainly have a different spin. So I'm looking forward to that. But in general, I kind of like going to Barcelona more than just the tapas. I think the sessions there are actually really good. All right, well, that'll do it, man. So we've got, like I said, we've got these interviews, so we're gonna leave you with those, and we're gonna pack our bags and head to Barcelona. John, anything else before we take off?
All I know, Pete, is there better be some jamón when I land. Like, it's time instead of TTL on packets, it's like TTJ, like time to jamón is the most important factor when I'm getting back into Barcelona.
So, are you stocking up on all your vegetables now so you can enjoy all of those?
Oh, yeah. Tapas? It's nothing but romaine with like a little bit of balsamic vinegar and some olive oil. I'm preparing my body for the overwhelming amount of salt. I've called my cardiologist and be like, hey, I just want to apologize for what's about to happen because there's going to be some salt in my diet.
I love it. All right, well, that'll do it for us. We're going to leave you with these four interviews to get you ready for VMworld Barcelona. So we'll see you there. All right, joining us for the second time, but the first time as a VMware employee is Mr. Niels Haggard. Niels, welcome back, my friend.
Dude, that's actually not accurate because I was on your podcast like 2 months ago with Johan.
Oh, that's right. That's right. I forget. See, I thought you were still, I thought you weren't at VMware.
He's just been rambling and podcasting so long. Yeah. Everybody thinks his mind is gone. Yeah.
Shame on me.
Shame on you.
Shame. And joining you is one of your new coworkers, Justin Murray. Justin, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Great to be here.
Yeah. So what are you guys talking about this week?
Machine learning, GPUs, Bitfusion.
Oh, yeah.
How to do all those things. What are the options for GPUs? How best make use of your GPUs?
Oh, yeah. That's super exciting. I do remember the podcast that we did when we talked about the GPUs. I thought that was a really good episode.
Yeah, definitely. It is an interesting topic, and especially this VMworld with all the announcements, right, around Bitfusion, basically creating vSphere as a deep app platform for whatever, Kubernetes, virtual machines, but also machine learning, AI, etc. There's a lot of traction when it comes to hardware accelerations and GPU in specific.
So let's talk about GPUs. When I think of GPUs in a server, I think of, you know, trying to stuff it back in the day, you know, at best 2 or 3 GPUs in a box and achieving what felt like the, you know, thermal density of, you know, a pizza oven or something. How does Bitfusion change that situation?
So Bitfusion is a really interesting technology. So now we have the ability to basically have ESX IOs without GPU, without being equipped with a GPU. And we have ESX IOs with GPUs. And we can basically, without going into too much details already, but we can basically remote CUDA instructions from a client VM, which is the Bitfusion client VM, to a server VM, and that is running on the ESX IOs equipped with the GPU. Interesting thing about that is that we can expose that GPU to the server VM of Bitfusion by using DirectPath IO or with NVIDIA VG.
That's right, yeah. And it's really pooling in the same way that we pooled other resources,
sure,
like storage resources pooled with vSAN.
Right? Sounds like a very familiar concept to VMware admins.
It doesn't matter where the resource is on the network, it's reachable. And so, as Niels rightly said, it's the ability of people to use GPUs as if they were pooled somewhere in a bank of virtual machines, which are GPU enabled. And so just the basics, though, when Niels mentioned CUDA, that's the library that NVIDIA ships for programming a GPU. And so what Bitfusion does is intrude on a call to CUDA and say, this should really go over the network. And the CUDA call is transported across the network to where the physical GPU really is and executed in the VM that's controlling that GPU.
How does it make the determination of whether or not it should go over the network?
It's a CUDA call. So
if it's calling CUDA and there's no NVIDIA card attached, it's going to say, better go send this somewhere else.
Okay, that makes sense.
And it's dynamic. You don't have that GPU for very long. So the big issue with GPUs, and GPUs, by the way, are there because machine learning people are using neural networks. And neural networks are, as their name implies, networks of software with a lot of mathematical calculation going on at every node in the network. Multiply and accumulate. Google even designed hardware around multiply and accumulate and different floating point and IN4, IN16 references in there. But that's what demands GPUs, is that massively parallel need to do lots of multiply and accumulates at the same time.
Sure, yeah.
And neural networks do that millions or billions of times as you train your models, as you feed your images into the network. There's an awful lot of math going on. And not only is it feed forward through the network, but it's feed backwards, called backpropagation. And that's what's going on inside machine learning training and deep learning in particular. Deep learning is the field of machine learning that involves deep neural networks. And so if you're listening and if you're a VI admin person and you're hearing from your data scientist community, your machine learning community, we really need the high-end GPUs here. We definitely need them allocated to us and nobody else. The first question to ask them is, are you executing deep neural networks? They might say something like ResNet or a neural network like that. And these are pre-trained neural networks. And so if they're doing that, they've got a justified case for saying they need a GPU to themselves. And we would allocate a GPU to them using DirectPath if need be. But Bitfusion could also say, this one VM uses this one GPU and it's theirs for a while. So Bitfusion has the tremendous benefit of pooling your GPU power rather than dedicating it to one job for any great length of time.
So that was the topic of your session this week at VMworld, was what we're doing with Bitfusion now?
Yes, and a four-hour workshop tomorrow on this stuff.
Wow.
So there's been a lot of talks about this particular area. There's very, very lively interest in Bitfusion and all things GPU here. I think people here at the show are saying, we're being asked to provide GPUs. What are your options, Mr. VMware person?
And, okay.
And the options are three, and the three options can be combined together, so that makes even more options there. In summary, DirectPath IO, the simplest method. Use NVIDIA Grid for virtual GPUs, which can be vMotioned and suspended and resumed. And the third option is Bitfusion, which is you're a CPU user on one side, and there's a GPU VM on the other side. You can talk to each other over Bitfusion.
So what does the networking look like for this? So, okay. I mean, this is something that previously was attached over an ultra-low latency PCI bus.
You're correct.
What, 50 nanoseconds, 200
correct.
If there's a PCI switch. And, you know, do you do this over Ethernet and InfiniBand?
So the beauty of this is that we can actually leverage our basic Ethernet fabric using TCP/IP, for example. Because remember, the workflow is not trespassing that fabric.
This isn't real-time graphics loading.
Exactly.
This is a batch.
It's not graphics.
No, it's not graphics. But we can also today leverage RDMA, for example. So we can use paravirtual RDMA to do exactly the same thing. And the beauty of RDMA being that you also, we support Rocky, right? So RDMA overconverts to Ethernet, which is still your Ethernet fabric.
You're
going
to have NICs and switches, though, that support Rocky. So
yeah, well, you need some priority flow control. Yeah, definitely.
Well, yeah, when you think about this machine learning stuff again, there's this neural network executing on the GPU, and you're sending it all of your training data over and over again. So you could be transmitting quite a bit of data across the network rapidly. You know, you're trying to keep that GPU occupied.
100 gig?
100 gig. So we've tested it over VMXNet, over standard TCP/IP. It's been tested over RDMA, been tested over Rocky, as Neil said. You can come close to native performance with RDMA and
I
Rocky.
I saw that paper and seeing like the, that was impressive.
So yes, if you're doing high-end training, if you're doing lots of iterations through the training, yes.
So for the devices that are hosting the GPUs, are they just regular x86 servers with a lot of that? Are these low-cost ARM devices bolted on? Or are GPUs going to get Ethernet ports at some point? Like, I mean, what is that remote hardware looking like?
So today, that is just your basic host device, basically. Just running ESXi and running the Bitfusion server VM with the GPU attached to it, with the options we discussed before, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
So is there a certain care and feeding for this VM that we need to be aware of?
How much is it being used, basically? You know, so the things that have been reported to me here on the floor are, we've got GPUs, we've got data scientists, but the GPUs are only seeing 10% usage.
Well, because they're getting mapped one project to one scientist to one GPU, which is not efficient.
And that project is finishing or going quiet for a while, so what's the GPU doing now? So that's the argument for pooling, to say, more than one person should be a candidate for using any one GPU.
No, for this pooling, I guess, two questions. One, how do you monitor your GPU utilization in aggregate? Is that something I could do with VROPS or Wavefront?
Potentially, yeah. It depends on the depth you want to go to. So there's a simple command from NVIDIA-SMI, which is a simple instruction that prints out what's the usage right now, 80%, 20% use right now. And you can put that into a loop, of course, like top. But there are a variety of tools that go deeper than that. One of them is called NView, NVIDIA View, and it's a tool from NVIDIA. And another one is a library of APIs called libcupti, libcupti. And we've heard of Facebook and really high-end users of GPUs monitoring what efficiency they're getting out of their GPU farms. You know, they will apply 128 GPUs to a big job.
Oh, wow. So you want to make sure you're getting your money's worth.
That's pretty amazing. And imagine, you know, when they strung those 128 GPUs together across different machines, of course, the interconnections between those were giving them about a 50% efficiency.
Wow.
So
that's truly next level.
That's how distributed training came about.
In the extent of that, we do have a VROPS package out there from NVIDIA. So now you can basically...
Oh, good. So I can track my application performance and then all of the infrastructure, the switches, the GPUs, the CPUs, and watch that. Okay,
yeah.
That's what I was looking for. So.
And I think that's where all this is headed, which is, I bought a GPU. How efficiently am I using it? Where's it being used by whom? And can I share it with somebody else?
Well, it's still nice. So there's a library. So if I wanted to go write a Golang plugin or something to throw this into Telegraph or Prometheus, we could. So.
Right.
Well, sweet. Yeah. I will be sure to leave links to the sessions that you've done today, the ones that are available on YouTube, and of course, the blogs that you guys have been writing, which are fantastic.
So one thing to add, Pete. So we have a complete learning guide, which is now downloadable from VMware, which basically covers each and every bit how to expose GPUs, why use GPUs, and how to expose them to virtual machines. And we have an ebook on that as well for the more decision maker level. So that might be a helpful resource for our customers as well.
Very nice. Sweet. So, gentlemen, thanks, man. This has been great.
Thank you very much.
Woo.
So, Vince, what are you doing here at VMworld this week?
So, for me, it's all about education, learning more. I was handed an environment 5 years ago and said, here you go. And I just kept looking at it going, there's something wrong here. Wait, that's not configured. What? This thing's like 10% installed. So it was like, I need to learn more. And that led to VMware certification, and I need more info. Right before the conference, I got quotes for a bunch of other products that reps are telling me, hey, this relates to exactly the problem you're looking for or trying to solve, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, okay, two sessions into VMworld, and I've already got my answer. I need to go down the vRealize path, not the NSX path initially. come back to that later.
Yeah.
So it's all education, and my God, is there good information here?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Lots of good information here.
So one of the chats we were having when I ran into you in Houston was we were talking about storage, and you were talking about virtual volumes.
Yeah.
What's your storage situation looking like right now?
Vastly improved. Let's just put it that way. No, so when I was handed in the environment, we had one nimble array that was aging.
Yeah.
And we had a number of tools in place to monitor the vSphere stack and storage operations and all these different details. And I kept getting a couple hundred alerts every night that we were hitting 300 millisecond, 500 millisecond, 1 second of latency across the array.
Yeah, that's not going to work.
Those are bad.
No.
And I'd get up in the morning, I'm like, what happened? So I'd start digging into it. I'd get into the storage console, the array interface, and nothing.
Yeah.
No record of it. Get into the monitoring software and like, oh yeah, vSphere said that your data store number 12347 has the problem.
Sounds like your LUN numbering scheme was the let's just choose a spirit number in the air.
Or it could just be
LUNs suck.
Could be.
There we go.
I love that quote. Thank you. Anyway, high latency, can't find it in the interface. Looking through historical reports, found, oh, there's another problem I need to fix. Long story short, it was all happening because we had very few volumes, very few data stores, and all of our 100 plus at the time VMs spread across, I don't know, 3-4 data stores.
Ah.
So you kick off backup jobs and you're backing up 20 VMs.
You got one IO queue per LUN.
Exactly. So that fast forward from there to I land on a webinar or presentation by this guy named Cody the industry.
I've heard of him.
Yeah, he seems familiar. Anyway, so he starts talking about this virtual volumes topic, and I'm like, whoa, solution. So I implement it, get it working. We end up buying an X10 array from Pure Storage, and
woohoo! the Vaughn.
We buy it, we get it implemented. All of a sudden, all of the metrics across the board, from the monitoring system to vSphere, everything syncs up. And I'm no longer getting any alerts, false positives, but alerts. Hey, hundreds of milliseconds. No, I'm getting, hey, you got to 14 milliseconds last night?
Hmm.
Cool.
Yeah, 14 milliseconds in the middle of a backup job that previously killed everything. Yeah.
Yeah, I'll sleep through that.
Yeah. It's rather uneventful of an event.
So you've been on vVols now? You got it in production?
Almost all of our workloads are running on vVols, and that's across actually two different array vendors.
Very nice. Very nice.
So,
all right, Vince, thanks for joining us, my friend.
No problem.
All right, joining us now, VMworld 2019, is Wes Milliron. What kind of name is that, Wes?
It's just a regular person's name.
Ah, my favorite.
It's uncommon enough that people question it, but we're out there.
I like it. I like it. Awesome. So you have the honor of having one of the very few or possibly only VMworld sessions dealing with Robo, right?
Yeah, that's correct. So
wait, you said Robo.
Oh, don't tell Jason.
We have upset Jace is somewhere.
Yeah, there's a meme being thrown at us right now. You can't see it, but it's happening.
I'll rename that.
So let me correct you. Tunode.
vSAN Tunode
is a topology. Robo is a licensing.
Uh-huh.
Yes, and as you go through those motions, that is something that Jace McCarty is very particular about, is maintaining the message on Tunode as an architecture, whereas Robo is a license type. So yeah, anyway, we're co-presenting with Max Abelardo of vSAN Tunode customer journey, because that's, you know, I'm a customer, and we went through the scoping and purchasing and design process, and then all the way through implementation and the lessons that we learned along the way. It's a relatively kind of unique deployment. It's not difficult, but it does have its little asterisks, its caveats, things you need to pay attention to make sure that you get it right.
Well, let me start with the why. So what was the attraction to the Tunode in the first place?
Great question. So the company that I work for, we're a regional retail grocery chain. So we have several hundred locations, but for the scope of this project that we did is we had a handful of warehouses where we had a low VM workload, but we did have the requirement to have HA. So we were going through scoping and of the plethora of products that could potentially solve that problem. But we were a relatively new but embedded VMware customer, so we went about exploring Tunode as an option. And when we coupled the Tunode vSAN architecture with the Robo license, it was a cost-effective method of being able to achieve all of our requirements at those sites.
Ah.
Another requirement that we had, and I'm kind of getting down a little bit into the weeds.
That's okay. Dive down.
A lot of these remote sites that a lot of customers have, they don't have 10 gig networking, right? So when that's a requirement when you go with an all-flash build, which is something that we wanted to do. So the way we configured it and an option, a fully supported option, is to configure them in a direct connect configuration, which basically just eliminates the need for 10 gig switching,
right,
more or less, which if you're on a tight budget, that can be an issue for those sites.
Especially depending on how many you deploy these around the country, that adds up.
Absolutely. And we were in a kind of a unique position, but it worked really well for us, and it was the perfect architecture for the problems that we were trying to solve. But you know, with any new deployment, there are plenty of lessons that we learned along the way. So that's kind of what the session is about, is to help other potential customers not run into the same issues.
Yeah, that's personally one of my favorite things about that whole architecture is the flexibility of it, the ability to take this common operational model and common deployment pattern,
right,
and go from, you know, 5 VMs at a site all right. the way up to enterprise grade, production ready, and you just stop wherever on that journey your particular requirements require. Right.
Yeah, if it fits in your budget and if it's meeting your requirements and if we can continue under the same VMware umbrella of products, it helps ease our management, then why not? And another one of the lessons that we had learned along the way is this is something that is stressed in every project, but how critically important documentation is, because when you deploy these environments at all these different sites, there's a good chance that you don't have technical employees at those sites, or it might be difficult to get them there. So we kind of went through the motion of, you know, creating our build documents and how everything was configured, and basically passing it off to the next guy on the team, and the next guy on the team, the next guy on the team, and they would take care of all the builds for all the other warehouses. So at the end of the day, we had all of our warehouses fully deployed and configured, working properly, but we also had our team of people that was also intimately familiar with how to build and how to manage and how to configure this environment.
A team.
Yeah, a team. Weird. Yeah, right. We had a whole team of people who were kind of trained, so to speak, on how to take care of this, which is great because I love going on vacation more than I love managing these clusters. But you know, to enable you to do that, you have to, you know, you have to have other people that can pick up the slack while you're gone.
Oh yeah.
So it's always interesting, like, you know, from the consistency, when there's lots of things that you can do, but how do you scale that? Because it can't all just be about you. You don't want to always be on call 24/7. And so, you know, sometimes that's documentation. Sometimes that's on making it more consumable to these, you know, lower skilled people who are in a warehouse. I mean, maybe we make sure this cable is always blue and this one's always red. Right. So that way they can, you know, go through that.
Right. Yeah. We went to the level of detail. We took pictures of the backs of the servers, and, you know, we'd illustrate it on those images what ports we were allocating for vSAN traffic and management traffic and whatnot, to make it so that if we have to call someone at that site, hey, plug this cable into X port into the back of server. We spent a lot of time developing very thorough documentation. It was critical to our implementation.
One thing that's also interesting when you're dealing with lots of remote site turnups, the tooling is so much better than it used to be. Because it used to be you had to just send whoever, you know, the smart guy out there. But your ability to pre-build and drop ship, some of the vendors sometimes will help you out there. The other thing is also some of these like remote console devices or you know, remote support. This stuff has evolved a long way over the past 20 years.
I mean, if you want to pay for it, man, you can put a 4G connection in the back of every server, right?
Right, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I actually saw one case. This router is not necessarily a host, but it was a console to lightning cable. You plug it into your iPhone, you run this app, it builds a reverse SSH shell. And so any schmuck who has an iPhone, they install the app. And I think
buy this? I need one of these.
We were spinning a bunch of sites, and we just duct taped one of these cables to every router we had or switch, you know, that was out there. And then it was just find whoever has an iPhone and get them to do the app. And I think the app cost $1, so we duct taped $1 to it to offset the cost.
Oh, that's awesome. I love the point that you brought up, Wes, about the thorough documentation, because that's something that I think a lot of people skip.
Right.
It particularly, because you do have a team, right? You've got whatever it is, you know, 3 to 12 people probably who are managing whatever it may be, right? 25 to 1,000 sites.
Right.
And every single deployment's the same. At a certain point, it's all scripted, it's all automated. As John said, you've got it down to a science, but it's in taking that time to build those runbooks, to build that operational documentation, that you pay yourself forward in the future, because your team, once you finish this rollout, you get reassigned to something else, right? The business moves you forward.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm in the industry of constantly migrating old stuff to new, right?
Yeah.
There's always something being decommissioned that we're rolling forward into the next thing. So as soon as one project is finished, we're moving on to the next thing. If I don't enable my teammates to be able to support something that I was working on, I'm setting myself up for for future failure.
Yeah,
no, something I'm looking for.
Well, I loved the way that you framed it too, right? I like to go on vacation because that's the way to think about it, right? Yeah. It's not. I think all too often people in this business, particularly in the transition that we're living through at the moment, there's a lot of fear about job safety. And the reality is, like, the way that you secure your position is by being a value, empowering other people, and freeing yourself up to be able to go on to those next projects.
Absolutely.
And be able to take that vacation so you don't burn out, that you can do this for 20 years without driving yourself crazy and getting a stroke.
Right, right. No, yeah, I've heard it expressed as, if you can't be replaced, you can't be promoted. So don't put yourself in a silo where you won't ever be able to get yourself out of.
I love that. I haven't heard that one. I like that.
So,
you know, we did a session. I think it was our most popular podcast last year. Was the top 10 VMware admin tools, and two of the tools that kept coming in repeatedly had to do with documentation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they were automating the way to actually generate the documentation.
Right.
But the point is documentation is important. Whether you're automating it, whether you're having something, being able to document your environment is key.
Absolutely, it's what's going to help you support it moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, you see this all over the place, right? I mean, even let's go on the other side of the space. Go find some developers. What do they complain about? Comments and code.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Documentation is everything.
That's right.
So what were some of the other caveats or lessons learned, if you will?
Right. So, I mean, when we started this journey, it was also our very first vSAN purchase. So we had all of the vSAN goodness to learn about at the same time, which that's its own kind of bundle of information to take in. And then we started learning more about subjects like witness traffic separation when we got into the Direct Connect configuration. And that's a whole other new thing. And that's a deep topic in itself that we don't have time to get into. But, you know, we were learning about that and how you have to reroute witness traffic in a Direct Connect configuration.
So set of routes,
it's not just install ESX, enable vSAN, and walk away. There's some other, you know, making sure that hardware compatibility is a huge thing. That's all of vSphere, right?
Oh, yeah.
But vSAN especially, you know, you're bringing storage back into the box. You got to take that into account as
well.
Absolutely,
yeah.
Something that I also didn't know was, you know, how you have to keep your storage disks on a separate storage controller from your, like, ESX volume or whatever. Like, you can't operate.
Yeah, so if you're doing, like, a RAID 1 mirror for boot, there's going to be some allowances for that. There's actually a KB devoted to that now.
Okay.
But that's a controller by controller, whether that'll be allowed.
Right. We were advised at the time that it's generally, you know, running a storage controller in mixed mode is generally ill-advised. So,
Well, because at that point, you're also buying a RAID controller.
Right.
Probably to the boot. And you don't want RAID controllers anymore. You just want to pass RAID.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. So that's, considering this was our first step into vSAN, these were all of the lessons that we were learning.
Nice.
I'm curious. When you took that step, did you end up going out there, doing all this research, finding that HCL, picking your favorite NIC and your favorite processor, or did you end up just pulling up the ReadyNode list and going, I want that one, it's close enough?
Good question. So as you know, that's definitely a choice, right? If you want to go out and pick a CTO server and you want to choose each individual component, you can do that. That's not something that I would recommend because that sounds like a headache.
Oh, yeah.
And vSAN HCL is your friend in that regard because you have to, you know, strictly independently verify each individual component. We don't want to do that. I don't have time to do that. So we chose to go with a ReadyNode solution by our OEM of choice, and that choice was largely driven by, you know, I work for a reasonable size enterprise. We've been buying hardware from the same OEM for a long time. So we kind of landed in that partner right away.
We've got 16 different OEMs. Whoever you like to work with, we got you covered.
And all we wanted to know as a customer was, hey, like, we don't want to be in a situation where this hardware is not supported. Like, what we want out of the box is a ready-to-go thing, more or less. And I don't want to call it an appliance because it's not the same.
It's not turnkey, but at least you know it works.
Right, and we know it's validated, and it worked really well for us.
I love it. Well, listen, real quick, what was the name of your session? Because I know by the time people hear this, the session will have already played, but we can watch it on YouTube. So.
Yeah, it's vSAN 2-Node in Robo Locations, I believe, HCI 2978.
Very good.
There you go.
All right, Wes, thanks for joining, and enjoy the rest of your VMworld.
Appreciate your time.
Sanjay, how you doing?
Are you coffeeed up and ready?
I'm coffeeed up and ready, my friend.
I'm ready to go.
Yeah.
I'm doing great.
Man,
delighted to be here.
What a great keynote. Lots of announcements this week, Carbon Black being one of them.
Yeah.
You know, I think what I've been hearing from a lot of folks is that VMware really knows how to do acquisitions.
We stay humble and hungry, and we've been successful with some of the large ones, like Nicira 6 years ago, AirWatch 5 years ago. I was very involved with AirWatch. So, you know, hopefully with Pivotal and Carbon Black, we bring some of that same mojo back.
Absolutely. So Tim Snyder from Freddie Mac, my goodness.
You great guys, guy.
600 applications all going to VMware Cloud on AWS.
Yeah, he's an incredible example of how to be bold in terms of thinking about your applications and their future in a hybrid cloud world. So it was a delight to interview him and Rathi, also from CTO from Gap. And you know, they've got slightly different strategies, but I think the key words for your listeners is sort of this. I joked about it on stage. M&M.
Yeah.
Right. I wish I had some M&Ms in my pocket when I was thinking about that, which is migrate and modernize, or modernize and migrate. And he's kind of taken the migrate, and then he's going to modernize along the way or shortly thereafter. And he's like going whole hog in on migrate, which is he's going to move, you know, except for the SaaS apps, let's say 590 of those 600 apps to VMware Cloud and AWS, which is huge. And I said, well, when I first heard that, I fell off my chair. But when I got back on my chair, I said, how long is it going to take you? He said a year, and then I fell off my chair again. Yeah. So he's pretty bold, and you know, it's kind of, you contrast that to Rathi, who is modernizing first, and she's doing a lot of that in Pivotal Cloud Foundry, which will now be part of the Tanzu family.
Yeah.
And then she'll migrate, and some of them she'll migrate to Azure. So here you got a customer who's going whole hog migrate into VMware Cloud and AWS. The other ones that's modernizing on-premise will keep some on-premise and then migrate some to Azure. The constant in both those stories is what? VMware.
That's right, yeah. And I'll tell you, that migration story has really got a facelift when it comes to HCX, right? I mean, being able to do that migration using HCX is a very powerful tool.
Yeah.
I think that really empowers a lot of folks to
a
do that.
A key part to the VMware Cloud family is being able to do that with some of the big tools we have. NSX underneath the covers, HCX, and don't forget sort of compute storage management.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit more about this Carbon Black. I'm not a huge network guy, and I've been doing some studying on it. It seems pretty exciting, but the thing I heard you say is the short version, I thought the part that was very memorable, was that it's consumer simple, enterprise secure.
Yeah, I think we've been building on that principle of consumer simple, enterprise secure, and endpoint, and end user computing and unified endpoint management. I think the analogy I used on stage, I'd give it to you again, which is sort of 30 seconds. My mom's a doctor, and imagine I went to her and said, what do I need to do to keep healthy, and she said, you need to eat 5,000 tablets. It would take you literally a couple of weeks if you popped a tablet every 30 seconds. So instead, why do you not do that in your life? Because you have a good diet. You eat vegetables, fruit, proteins, drink water, and you may need 5 or 10 supplemental vitamins, but not 5,000.
Yeah.
That's exactly the security industry. Unfortunately, people, they use similar terms to viruses, antiviruses. They're proposing an architecture and a bloatware set of tools and agents and consoles that's just broken. Instead, we need to bake it in a diet, which is make it intrinsic. And that's in essence what we're trying to get done, is take 5 key control points of security: network, endpoint, identity, cloud, and analytics. Analytics being all the telemetry that those 4, and bake that into an intrinsic platform. No one's done that before, never done before.
Nope.
So we have a big, huge ambition for 50 years of the security industry. It's been silo tool here, silo tool there. I think if we can make that part of an intrinsic platform, at our scale, we have the ability to do it. It's an adjacency to us in infrastructure. And we've started already to do some of that with networking. We have credibility in network security. We've been moving up stack to do micro-segmentation in the data center, security in the firewall level. We've acquired Avi now to do load balancing and application delivery controllers. Security we're baking into our SD-WAN capability. So networking, we've got credibility. Endpoint, we were starting to get some credibility with Workspace ONE, but not to the point where Carbon Black now brings us incredible. So Carbon Black, very simply put, is an endpoint security tool. It has 3 capabilities that's groundbreakingly unique. Number one, it's an AI-powered data lake. I mean, it collects a lot of data in the back end of the lake, and they see about 1 million cyber threats per day. Number two, they have a smart, lightweight agent, which sits on your endpoint. Could be a Mac, could be a Windows, could be Linux.
Sure.
Number three, they have a cloud-native multi-tenant architecture, okay? So that means they do this all in the cloud as opposed to, they have on-premise products too, but it's really cloud. So when you do this, this will become, pending the close, our security cloud solution. We will brand the security cloud solution Carbon Black, and there's like 7 modules that will be underneath it, and we're adding 2 from VMware into that family. App Defense and a vulnerability management capabilities that Tom Korn announced this week. So as we add that capability, this becomes a broader, and we're not done. There'll be 9 modules initially, there'll be many, many more. You integrate that Carbon Black capability with Workspace ONE, it's sort of like PB&J, okay?
Yeah.
You got endpoint management with Workspace ONE and endpoint security With Carbon Black, you get workspace security. We'll integrate this into vSphere and make it agentless. Nobody can do that. With NSX for network threat analytics. With Secure State, which was the Cloud Query acquisition for a cloud security solution.
Right, yep. Mm-hmm.
So you get the picture. So that's the kind of the quick elevator pitch I want everybody at VMware to know. If you watched, you know, I think it was 5 or 6 minutes towards the end of the keynote, we left security, which is a good part, I think, for the end. You save the good wine for the end.
Absolutely.
And I think hopefully that's what we start doing. But very similar to what we did with AirWatch 5, 6 years ago, people need to now know what the new story is for these new areas, and then we need to invest. Go, and the 1,100 people coming in from Carbon Black are really, really, really very good, savvy security folks.
Absolutely. It's always been exciting. You know, my history with VMware has always been, you know, you see, well, what are they doing? And all of a sudden you see, oh, that's why they did that 5 years ago. You know, Pat Gelsinger has been doing this since early days, even with the Intel, his research with Intel and processors. But it seems like it takes, you know, I love the fact that I work with such an innovative company that they're making moves right now. They're making acquisitions that, you know, 3 or 4 years down the line, people look and say, oh, that was brilliant.
We are very long-term type players.
Right? Absolutely.
I encourage your employees to listen, plot for the long-term. It shouldn't feel like if we went and did something in a completely different space, like applications or, you know, down in hardware, that would be completely different from the VMware
DNA,
right?
Oh, yeah.
But this security is an adjacency to us. Application development or modern apps, which is pivotal, are adjacency. So I think it made sense. And I think if there's two takeaways from this is, number one, VMware is going to be a force to reckon with, maybe the force to reckon with in containers. And number two, VMware's got a bold plan for security. And yeah, if your audience and the people who view, if you actually in San Francisco and in some of the places here, we have these ads that go containerware, mm-hmm, which is a play on the word VMware. And we're not changing the name of the company. It's still gonna be VMware. But remember, 21 years ago, Diane Greene founded this great company.
Yes.
And over those 21 years, this wonderful company has spawned 70 million VMs, okay? And workloads that run underneath us. I don't know if the next 5, 10 years there'll be 35 million containers or 140 million containers, but if we became the backbone of virtual machines in the world, we should also become the de facto container platform. Why not?
Absolutely.
And yeah, that's our ambition.
Well,
and people help us.
I'm ready, and I'm now fired up. Your other tagline that I heard today, man, it's been great talking with you today. Thanks for coming back on the podcast, and enjoy the rest of your VMware.
Great, I'm looking forward to it, and I'm coffeed up and ready and fired up and all the words between. Thank
great
you.
Great stuff.
All right, well, that music tells me it's time to go. And so if you want to get in touch with us, send us an email at podcast@vmware.com. You can subscribe to us on your podcast app of choice by searching Virtually Speaking Podcast. You can catch this and all episodes at vspeakingpodcast.com. I hope our interviews got you ready for VMworld Barcelona. We're going to pack our bags and see you there. But until then, bye for now. La niña de Barcelona, oh, 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 son bonitas, bailan bien, oh, 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 simplemente una mirada, oh, 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 te rompen el corazón. Es un pueblo de gitano, oh, 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 donde nació la rumba. Enough of this jibber jabber.